Lincoln.
I'll answer just about anything. May it please the Court. It seems to me that this case kind of comes down to two issues. First of all is whether or not Mr. Massey is a person that would fall within the statute in terms of receiving any money or title to any property or anything like that during the course of this. And I don't believe that the Commonwealth's evidence rose to that level. One of the other issues that I think is important for the court to consider is that there's...
Is he an agent or a principal in second degree
That was one of the things that came up in the air with that, because if the court will please remember, I think the defendant's first exhibit was the letter from the doctor, Upadet, that said that was addressed to Weldon Wood, which is a timber company, and said, your agent, Mr. Massey. And in fact, the court referred to Mr. Massey as an agent during some of its rulings. So if he's just an agent of the Timber Corporation, Your Honor, I don't know that there's a way that he is a person. He may receive some payment later on for his services, but there's no showing that he's a direct recipient or an indirect recipient of any of the money that's paid for the timber by Mr. Short, who cut it down later on and was the one that made the payment, the $15,000 payment. And it would seem that the second thing is that whether or not the Commonwealth's evidence rose to the level of showing that Mr. Massey had fraudulent intent at the time that the contract was entered into. And there's the Commonwealth raises the issue of the changes in the contract and the notes that are made in the margin and that sort of signing and that sort of thing. But that still doesn't change the fact.
It seems to me the best evidence of intent from the Commonwealth's perspective is the other similar instances of similar conduct, I guess, for lack of a better way
sure.
to phrase it.
Well, that was something we dealt with, but if the court please remember, the bulk of those people ended up being paid eventually, or it was dealt with a different corporation, and some of them turned around and sued Mr. Massey, but Mr. Massey was never prosecuted criminally for any of that, either in Virginia or North Carolina. And the fact that the contract has changed and that sort of thing, Judge, I don't think gives rise to any inference of that, particularly in light of the fact that this was kind of the second go-around between Weldon Wood Corporation and Dr. Upadet. He had been paid previously. It had taken longer than the period of time that Mr. Massey had originally agreed upon. But the contract in this case is the contract in that case called for a period of time of up to 18 months where he'd be given access to cut the timber.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Ms. Harris, you have 12 and a half minutes left, I think, so you have plenty of time for rebuttal.
For rebuttal.
I'll take some suggestions.
We appreciate your brevity.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Susan Harris for the Commonwealth. The findings that the judge made summarize why the evidence was bountiful and why it was sufficient to convict Massey of felony false pretenses. The trial judge observed that Massey engaged in a pattern, that was his word, of entering into transactions sometimes as an agency for a company of which he is a principal, Weldon Wood, sometimes for Mossy Oak and people not getting paid. And then he noted the...
Well, is the Commonwealth's theory here that he's a principal in the second degree or a principal in the first degree? Or what? I mean, what's the theory of liability
take
here?
Take your pick. I mean, he's...
Well, I have you to take your pick, so...
Well, he was an agent for a company of which he's a principal. So I guess, you know, sometimes he, depending on how convenient it was, he would say he was doing it as an agent of Weldon Wood. And sometimes he would not bother with that. But the point is, none of the victims dealt with anybody except for Mr. Massey. And the judge rejected that sort of argument that somehow he was some hapless employee running around doing the bidding of this Weldon Wood.
Ms. Harris,
it just didn't fly.
Setting aside the issue of criminal agency, a false pretense must be a representation to an existing fact or a past event. False representations amounting to mere promises or statements of intention have reference to future events and are not criminal within the statute. What do you contend to be the false representation of the existing or past fact or event?
Well, in a nutshell, there were several, but in a nutshell, He, as the judge said succinctly, is that he represented this pattern. He had this pattern of representing that people would get paid for their timber and then not doing it.
That's not a representation, though. Of a past fact. That's a promise to pay something in the future.
Well,
he's saying I will gladly pay you on Thursday is not a representation of a past or existing fact.
Well, his representation is that if they sign over their right to harvest the timber, that he will pay them in these increments. He will not cut anything until they're all paid, and then he enters into this contract. It just doesn't happen.
But aren't those just promises or statements of future intention to pay or to not cut? Those are things that are going to occur in the future. They are not existing facts or past events or facts. That's why I'm having problems.
I guess I don't understand why.
Well, if you will loan me $10,000, I will pay you back at 20% interest, and I fail to do so. That's not a false pretense.
That's different, though, because what he's doing, if you look at the elements, you have to have an intent to defraud. You have to have an actual fraud. You use the false pretenses for the purpose of perpetrating the fraud, and that is that I'm going to harvest, or either I'm going to do it, or I'm going to sign the right to harvest the timber, and no, it's not going to get done until you get paid.
But when you say, I'm going to do it, you're using the future tense there. I am going to do it. Not I have done it, but I am going to do it sometime in the future. So I didn't see any representation here that I can really put my finger on of a past fact or event or future or a current fact or event.
Present or past, I think is what.
And help me with if I'm missing something. Or.
Well, I guess I just don't understand the difficulty.
I think that, if I represent to Judge Petty that in return for $50,000 I'm going to deed over some property that I have in Florida, and I don't own any property in Florida. So he hands me, the cash, and I hand him a purported deed, which is false. There's a quid pro quo, if you will, a present exchange. Whereas, if I promise to do so at some point in the future, our case law is problematic about whether that would actually constitute the crime of false pretense, promising to do something at some point in the future, as opposed to a present exchange.
Well, perhaps it would be more helpful to look at, say, the cases that are, say, analogous to this sort of situation. Look at the Austin case, where the woman went in and she represented that she was. She gave them a check, and she was going to take the rugs out and try them, and represented that check was going to be viable after she tried them, and whether or not if she didn't like them, she'd bring them back. So and then she went to the bank and stopped payment. That's sort of the same thing that Massey did. Is he never intended to pay, the court found that he never intended to pay.
Austin dealt with evidence of fraudulent intent,
and
not evidence of the false representation.
Well, so does Massey. I mean, it's.
Well, I'm not debating that. Okay. I think there's evidence here of fraudulent intent. What I'm questioning is whether there is a false misrepresentation.
As to the fact, you mean there. Is the court saying that they have a question about whether or not he?
Well, I think getting back to my earlier, see if I can help you here.
Okay.
Getting back to my earlier analogy, if I the example I gave would be a false pretense, if assuming it could all be proven. But if I were to tell Judge Petty, in return for this $50,000 you're going to give me, at some point in the future I will deed over
this property, maybe after I'm done doing something with it or whatever, but at some point in the future I will do it. And then I don't perform on that. Judge Petty's point is that that promise to do something in the future is, or at least there's some case law that seems to suggest that is insufficient to support the element of not the element of fraudulent misrepresentation, which she's sort of focusing on, but on whether there's actually a false pretense, a present pretense, if you will.
Right, and I think what this modus operandi is it's more than just I'm contracting with you and I promise to pay you in the future and then I don't do it. I renege on that. That's not false pretenses. But what Massey did that was different is he would go in at the outset, the trial judge was very impressed with this. From the outset, as the case law also makes clear, the intent is a secret operation of the mind. We can only look at his statements and his conduct. And looking at that, the trial judge determined that Massey went into this encounter not intending to pay or wanting to induce Upad Hadye into signing over his right to the timber wood and never giving him anything. And the only reason he got $15,000 is because he also lied to Short, who was a fellow person in the timber wood business, about whether or not this victim had been paid at all. So I hope the court doesn't try to parse it out so into discrete segments that you sort of miss the forest for the trees.
Well, we have to parse it out so that each element of the offense has been established by the evidence.
And I think there was an intent to defraud. There was an actual fraud. There was a use of false pretenses for the purpose of perpetrating the fraud. And surely the accomplishment of the fraud.
What you gloss over is the use of false pretense. And a false pretense cannot be a promise to do something in the future. A false pretense, if he had said, I have a buyer already lined up who will buy this timber, and that induced the owner to part with his property, then I would see where you're coming from.
I understand the point that you're making is because we don't want to punish, if someone fails to, a routine failure to pay on a contract, that, we're not making that criminal. I understand that. The court's point or concern in that regard, but in this case, taking it all together, I think that the court was right on finding sufficient evidence. And as Judge Humphreys pointed out, we shouldn't overlook the fact that this was a course of conduct with Massey. It was a pattern, and. There were two North Carolina families that this fraud was perpetrated upon, and two in Virginia. I think those are the points that I wanted to make. And unless the court has questions, I'll stand down.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Herrick. Mr. Linka, would you like to respond to any of that?
I would, please. Very briefly. Maybe in less than 2.5 minutes, sir.
Well, you have 12 and a half.
12 and a half. Then we'll stand here and stare at each other for 10 and a half.
Instead of just glossing over this, what's your position on this this concern of mine that there's no, there doesn't seem to be evidence of any past or existing fact? It seems more of a promise to do something in the future.
Well, I would agree with you, and the reason that I'd say that is that, first of all, there had been dealings between Massey and Upad in the past, number one. And number two, everything in terms of the contract was signed and said that the timber and the payments and all those things will happen subsequent to the entry of the contract. And again, if Mr. Massey had shown up and cut the trees and then attempted to negotiate the contract or had people there doing something to the property and without any intention of paying, it would be an entirely different situation. But as the court here and the trial court has noted, that the, one of the distinctions between, I think, the Austin case, which is cited by the Commonwealth here, is that the lady there that went and bought the rugs was the one that had actually negotiated the instrument and promised to pay. And so I don't think it's too much of a stretch to imagine that she had the intent to walk out and not honor the checks. But in this particular case, since there had been a past history between Upade and Massey, and in fact Upade had been paid, and Massey had acted as the agent, which I think is evident by the judge's ruling as well as Dr. Upade's interpretation of things, that everything from the date the contract is signed forward that the Commonwealth would rely on to prove that he had this fraudulent intent, I think would require the court to speculate. And I think the court speculated to get that far and to call Mr. Massey an agent, more than an agent, and instead make him a principal in the corporation, which is, I think, what the court's ruling was. It said he was an agent or a principal.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Thank you, Mr. Lincoln.
Thanks, sir.
We'll come down to Greek Council and then take up the